After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
And I had a massive seizure. And what happened was, all I remember is opening my eyes and I am laying with my head in my grandma's lap. And my grandma looks like the youngest, healthiest version of her that I can remember. I am in this timeless space, which is blissful, unconditional love. And I notice that I appear to be in a white room. And these walls are almost breathing because they are alive. And there's every cell and molecule in these white walls is radiating this light and love. And so I was just in so much awe and peace where I was. Very, nothing scary or jolting. It was just like, oh, I could lay here forever.
Hey everyone, it's Raghu and I'm back with a very fascinating and interesting guest. And I'm really happy, Michelle, that you're joining us today. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be here.
And so Michelle Claire is many things, actually, right?
Yes.
And multifaceted practitioner is a good word, relating to spiritual expertise. And she's a medium and an intuitive and a spiritual coach. And I didn't know you did this part. You know, I'm just reading it. As a medical intuitive, you do that as well.
I do.
Yeah, I've worked with some people in that area. You probably know them, but I can't remember their name right now because it's many years ago. But that was extremely a good choice I made then. So that's great. I'm happy to know that. And Michelle has had a few near-death, NDE, near-death experiences. And this is something that I've always been interested in. In fact, I've had, Michelle, various different people, either directly like you giving their experiences of it, or people have actually done research on hundreds of people who, you know, and they've really kept these incredible databases of what exactly happened to each of these people. The similarities are astonishing, as I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was, Ram Dass and I spent time, like I'd say, oh, I'm going to do this podcast and so on. Well, tell me what you find. And he had a lot of different literature around it. So obviously, this is something understandable as you age and you get to the point where you're really thinking about such kind of thing. So he was doing that, and so we had a common interest. So this kind of brings him back into the conversation, so to speak. So
yeah.
I'm happy to talk to you.
I find them fascinating too. What I love about near-death experiences as we research them is it doesn't matter how old you are, if you're male or female, where in the world you live, how you died. So many near-death experiences are finding the exact same thing on the other side.
Hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And by the way, I wasn't looking for it, Michelle, but I found an article on NDE, and it really gave the historical perspective and so on. So I'll bring that in too. So that'll be fun. But before anything, tell us about how, you know, you grew into this multifaceted abundance here, shall we say, related to being able to really help people through being able to connect. And right. I'd love to hear, I mean, in your formative years, what, you know, we all went through the societal stuff and the parental stuff and the school thing, you know, some of us were a little bit more miserable than others, depending on circumstances and karma and so on. But yeah, how did you even get to the point where you there? Oh, wow, there is something beyond our physical senses, et cetera, mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of ways it was the hard ways with the near-death experiences. But for my childhood, I was raised Catholic. And in a lot of ways, that worked for me because I felt like I had angels and saints helping me. If my dog was sick, I'd pray to St. Francis. If I lost something, I'd pray to St. Anthony. So the part of that that was very beautiful for me was I actually already believed in this heavenly support team that was there to help me and guide me on my way. The first time, though, that I had a real problem with the Catholic religion was when I was in first grade and my dog died. And my Sunday school teacher said to me, well, your dog didn't go to heaven. And I was crushed because I knew my little dog had this life force energy in it. And I knew it had to exist somewhere. And so that was really the first time where I felt like, oh, I don't think this might all be right. And so at that point, I started being able to discern for myself. Yes, I knew what I needed to say was the answer was, but I also knew what felt right in my heart.
Hmm. So were you connected in any, I mean, like, you know, I'm much older than you, but still I connected at that time. I really looked because when I saw it for you, the Catholic practice, mine was Jewish, and it got to the dead end that you're speaking to. Wait a minute, this does not make sense. And then I went on looking for other paths and found the East, basically. That's what really turned me on. Did you enter into that kind of a thing where you looked at other paths particularly?
Not until after my near-death experiences. What I really did was I just decided that I'd be very polite about what I was being told and I would know the truth within my heart.
Mm. So you were actually getting, when as this, as you realize, wait, this is not correct. You know, this the way that this is being characterized is not correct. I know that deep inside myself. Is it at that point that you did start to get messages outside of yourself?
Not quite yet. I mean, I would feel messages, I would say a little bit from angels or source. I would feel that there was this bigger picture. But what really happened for me at that point in time was I started to kind of look at other religions and just think, well, everybody's just doing the best they can. I never got to the point where I felt like this was right or that was wrong, or I had to advocate or voice it or become an activist about anything. And then when I was 13 years old, my grandfather on my mom's side, he had been my favorite grandparent, he transitioned. And after he transitioned, I noticed that he and I were still communicating. We were still talking. I was still getting messages from him. And I would share that with my mom, and my mom would look at me and she'd say, well, that's what you think he would say if he was still here. And I realized, wait, not everybody's talking to grandpa still. So that kind of brought in another level of awareness for me. And at that point in time, I kind of decided, so I was still being raised in the Catholic faith. I was still doing all the things I needed to do as a Catholic, but I still had my own knowings within that I was very much in honor of. And a few years later, my grandmother passed away. And at that point, the night that I was sitting with her in hospice, so I was in college at that point in time, 20 years old. And as I was sitting with her that night, I remember feeling the angels in her room. I remember feeling her family, feeling these beings of light supporting her, surrounding her. And that was probably a completely different mediumship experience for me. At that point in time, I still actually didn't know the word mediumship. So I just knew I was having experiences or communication and connections. But I remember as I was sitting with my grandma, she would be talking to someone in spirit world. And even though I couldn't see them, I would know who they were. And I would say to her, is that your mom? And she'd say, yes. And she'd talk to her mom. And then she'd look at me and smile and talk to her mom some more. And so I had this another great awareness of, once again, we are surrounded and supported on this journey. After my grandmother, yeah, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say,
after my grandmother transitioned, the same thing happened for me. I would get messages for her. I would share them with my mom, and my mom would say to me, well, I think that's what you think she would say if she was still here. So again, I start to keep this relationship to myself, even though I'm very aware of what it is. And then I ended up getting married when I was 23. And at that point in time, I wasn't really going to church anymore. I still had some strong Catholic roots, but I was just more open-minded than a lot of what I had been taught.
But even at that stage, you know, feeling what you were feeling in the room with your grandmother, feeling the entities that were there and the presence, however which way we want to, you know, characterize that, there had to be a certain strength. And I would only point to karma, really, in my languaging, to have that strength of conviction that what you were experiencing was not BS, was not deranged, you know, whatever anybody else might have said. Well, she's, you know, it's what they say to kids that have an imaginary playmate. Oh, yeah, well, that's nice, you know, and they dismiss it completely. What do you remember of that time having that kind of inner fortitude?
I remember actually the peace that I was feeling in her room. And I was sitting in a chair looking at her, and I was wondering how much longer she had, because we knew it was probably just hours. And I remember hearing a female voice, which I interpreted as my great-grandmother, her mom, in my right ear specifically. And she said to me, she'll be coming home soon. And within a couple hours, my grandma had passed. And so I remember actually there was nothing that was scary about it. I remember the peace and the love. I remember feeling supported. I remember thinking that she was supported, and actually great relief in knowing that there wasn't going to be this abyss or this blank space that she went to. It was like I was going to hold her hand for as far as I could take her, and then I was handing her off to her loved ones.
And that's, you're 20 years old, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's not particularly normal, Michelle.
You know, that's probably true, but I don't think most of my life is very normal. It's kind of what I signed up for.
Yeah, really, really. So then, yeah, continue with, I think you said you got married at that point, and then how did this develop where you thought, wow, maybe there's something here, and I'm getting a message that I could help people?
Right. So really, I just kind of went along with this as my own quiet little secret. My husband's dad had passed, and once in a while, I'd get messages from him for my husband. My husband had a similar view to my mom. Well, I think that's what you think he would say if he was here. So again, I'm learning, oh, I should just keep this to myself. Nobody really wants to hear about this. And I continue on with life. And then in April of 2006, I have my first near-death experience.
Oh, tell us about that.
And in that, I was actually in the hospital that day because my sister-in-law had just had a baby. And her RN was actually my friend from high school. So I was in the hallway talking to her RN, and I had a massive seizure. And what happened was, all I remember is opening my eyes, and I am laying with my head in my grandma's lap. And my grandma looks like the youngest, healthiest version of her that I can remember. I am in this timeless space, which is blissful, unconditional love. And I notice that I appear to be in a white room, and these walls are almost breathing because they are alive. And there's every cell and molecule in these white walls is radiating this light and love. And so I was just in so much awe and peace where I was. Very, nothing scary or jolting. It was just like, oh, I could lay here forever. As I was laying there, I look up and I notice next to my grandma is this 12-foot angel. And this angel was beyond magnificent. And her energy almost pulled me into her in the sense of love and compassion. And really this feeling of being perfect. In that space, it felt like everything was perfect. It was so amazing. And as I look at this beautiful angel, being raised Catholic, I'm like, oh, I want to see her big feather wings because, you know, she's got some, right? As I look for these wings, what I notice is her wings are made of light, and they actually seem to almost span across eternity. They are very much like the aurora borealis in the sense that they would move and kind of have flashes of color in them, quite stunning. And as I was laying there just in awe of her, I remember thinking in my head, what is your name? And she answered me. She said, my name's Madeline, and I'm one of your guardian angels. And I was surprised because I didn't know anything about telepathic communication, even though you would think I would have, I didn't. And I remember just being in this state of bliss, truly bliss. The next thing I know, I hear someone yelling, code, 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 and I am shoved back into my body. And it felt like I went from being light as a feather to 10,000 pounds of wet cement. It was just heavy and dense. And I remember my arm. I could barely lift my arm. It felt like it weighed 500 pounds, just one arm. And what happened was because I was already in the hospital when I had the seizure, I had quit breathing. So they had called the code team. They admitted me into the hospital. They could not find out why I had the seizure. I had never had one before, and I have not had one since.
Jeez. Wow. Do you know, it occurs to me, so you grew up Catholic and you had these images. You had the sort of nomenclature of Catholicism, which includes angels. Mm-hmm. And that's what manifested. And then I'm thinking that, so my history with Ram Dass, meeting my guru, Neem Karoli Baba, realized being in India, I'm thinking, you know, and I relate with him on a day-to-day basis, right, inside mm-hmm. myself. I'm thinking, I'm counting on when I leave this mortal coil that hand will grab my hand and go into what the Tibetans call the bardos, go through the different planes of consciousness. And I'm thinking it makes sense for these beings to be your protectors and manifest in terms of images and so on exactly that way. And it makes sense for me. And then if you take this further to have Neem Karoli Baba, and if you take it further, and this has been in the NDE literature, I mean, it's not universal that they're going to have your or my experience, you know, in that when it happens. But it'll have whatever it is that you grew up into and what you were connecting will manifest itself. But in reality, my understanding of how it all is, there is only one thing going on, and it manifests the way it's perfect for each soul. Does that make sense?
I agree. 100%. Yeah. People, that source of energy or consciousness, whatever we want to call it, it will always greet us with love and compassion. And because of that, we're going to be met in the way that we're comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So then keep going. So this happens, and then what?
So that happens, and I really don't have the term near-death experience for this. I know I've had an amazing experience that was more vivid than my daily life, but I don't really tell anyone about it for a few weeks, and then I explain it to my mom, and my mom believes me. She just doesn't know how to put it together or what to call this. So I just continue on with life as it had been. But I would say at this point in time, I started getting stronger messages from that angelic realm, or just my intuition was opened up even more.
Were you working? Did you have a career in some particular?
I was working for the airlines, for Delta Airlines at that point in time.
Oh, far out.
Yes. So very much I go back to my normal life as Michelle. I mean, I have a stronger awareness, but this hasn't changed my course or given me my huge spiritual awakening yet. So what happens then is I end up having 3 children, and I end up having my second near-death experience in May of 2006, and that was 6 weeks after I had had my son. I had many complications after I had him, so I was in the hospital the majority of the following 6 weeks. Basically, the doctors had said if they did a DNC, which is a procedure where they clear out the uterus, that I would be fine. It was going to be a 45-minute outpatient procedure, and I'd go home and live life happily ever after the end. That sounds really good after you've been in the hospital about 6 weeks, right? You want that easy button.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. And the night before, I was at home, and I just had a pit in my stomach. So at this point in time, I'm married. I have a 5-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 6-week-old infant. I go in the next day for surgery, and I'd had anesthesia before. And whenever I've had it, it's just a blank space. There aren't memories or dreams or visions. I have nothing there. And I remember counting backwards for this anesthesiologist. The next thing I know, I am laying on the gurney, and my beautiful 102-pound white German Shepherd, who had passed away a couple years previously, walks into the operating room, lays her head on my gurney, and we are gone. And we are on this phenomenal beach. And on this beach, there are colors that we don't have here with the plants and the flowers. There are smells. There are emotions. There are sounds. Every drop of water in the ocean, every piece of sand, every molecule and every plant is radiating this light and love from within. And I'm looking at my beautiful dog, and we are on this beach, and we are running. And once again, we're telepathically communicating. She's so happy that I'm there, and she looks good. And as we run and run, I start to notice we're not getting hot. We're not getting tired. We're not getting thirsty. The sand, it feels like clouds. It doesn't feel like hard, wet beach sand. And so I start to become aware that this is, once again, this timeless space with this truly unconditional love. And here's kind of a funny little side note. Michelle herself hates to run. And I will tell my friends, if you see me running, call 911. That's an emergency, not me going out for a jog. But here I am in this near-death experience, just loving this beach and running with my beautiful dog. Now, while I'm on the beach with her, I can hear my son calling to me. And my son was actually at home with my mom, and I was at the hospital for the procedure. And what happens then is I realized my soul was able to go to more than one place at the same time. So there was part of me that stayed on the beach with my dog. There was another part of me that went to my son. My son was very scared. He knew I was getting ready to leave. He had just arrived on planet Earth. He wasn't ready for me to leave yet. And I remember telling him, I'm not going to leave you. I will find a way to stay. And I didn't know what to do. So I started praying, and I started saying, it's not my time. I need help. My children still need me. I need to stay longer. And at that moment, I was transported back into the operating room. Jesus came in, and the operating room lit up with this beautiful white golden light. Here was the beautiful thing about Jesus coming in. He came in as my best friend. He didn't come down wanting me to confess my sins or pray to him.
The usual, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He came in as like, I'm your best friend. How can I help you? Wow. So as that operating room lights up, the next thing I know, I'm waking up in post-op. And my 45-minute procedure had turned into a 3.5-hour emergency surgery because the doctor had ruptured my uterus in multiple places and missed an artery by literally a millimeter.
Whoa. Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And so from there, I knew once again, I had had this vivid experience, more vivid than the life that I live every day. And I had felt that love, that timelessness, all of it. But I didn't know how to integrate this into my life. I didn't know this was called a near-death experience. I was in horrible shape physically because now the infection had been pushed into my body cavity. I was still in the hospital. It took me months to be able to even get back to 80% of functioning normal. And so what happened at that point in time was, although this was vivid and unbelievably real, I went back into survival mode. I had three little kids and I was trying to heal. And so my awareness once again to spirit realm was opened up more strongly. But I didn't take action on what that looked like in my everyday life, besides maybe just having better intuition.
Mm. By the way, people listening out there could very much identify with some of these descriptions, certainly the timelessness and the unconditionality with their latest LSD or psilocybin trip. Right. Has that ever entered into your life?
Yes, actually in Arizona right now, I help facilitate ketamine treatments.
Oh, you do?
With one of my friends. She's a psychotherapist and we have a medical doctor also on board.
Wow. Oh, that's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one instance of that experience. The parallel is extraordinary as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And I've heard that a lot, that a lot of people who have had LSD or MDMA are having very similar experiences with the blissfulness and the timeline kind of merging and all of that.
Yeah. I was fortunate to go back to India with Ram Dass to meet this being that he described in the way he described, which was so extraordinary. And that exact experience, which Ram Dass later said, you know, of course, as Richard Alpert, he had had a billion trips with Tim Leary. And he said, that prepared me for grokking, which is an old term for meeting, like being able to absorb the reality that was sitting in front of me energy-wise. And that happened. I mean, without anything, just exactly as your NDE, and I'm sure you've had it in other situations as well. So there's parallels for the reality of the absolute single-mindedness of these various ways in which spirit manifests, I guess is a good way to put it.
Absolutely.
And of course, in this case with you, I mean, it included a bunch of suffering.
And, yes.
And how did you navigate that suffering?
So at that point in time, I went back to being a mom. I was a stay-at-home mom. I did think about having a lawsuit. And they said, well, you have to have $100,000 to lose if you're going to go in. I did not have that at that point in time. So it really just came back to learning how to heal, giving myself that time and sinking back into being a homemaker, a stay-at-home mom and wife. And that was really, I was very happy doing that, even though I had this greater awareness that was starting to seep in. I was still having mediumship communication with my grandparents and my husband's dad. And so I had a bigger awareness, but it really just became kind of my little secret. I learned not to share it with people. It was awkward. Not everyone had this. And so I just knew what I knew and I let that be what it was. I didn't feel like I had denied part of myself at that point in time. It just, maybe the better word would be ignored.
Yeah. Ignored is right.
Yes.
So, all right. Time then went on. You're being a mom, raising these children.
Yeah. So on 11-1-11, so November 1st, 2011, for people who like ones. My kids were then 10, 8, and 5. And at that point in time, our house had 14-foot ceilings and about 12 feet off the ground. I had battery-operated candles. And so once a month, I'd get out the ladder, climb up there, change the batteries, right. And then every night the candles would come on. My younger two kids were home. My oldest was at school and we were going to go pick her up after I changed the batteries. So I remember climbing to the top of the ladder and feeling it start to shift. And literally I thought, oh, this is going to hurt. And at that moment, I was ripped out of my body, not in a painful way, but in a fast way, like bungee cord fast, like turned around. And I was facing my body in the ladder, suspended in the air, like a freeze frame in a movie. And I was standing with these three people that I had never met, but I felt like I had known them my whole life. There was an Asian man, an Egyptian woman, and a Hawaiian man. And I just felt like they were dear family and friends, even though I knew I didn't recognize the faces that I was seeing. So as I was standing there, they said to me, what would you like to do? Would you like to stay or would you like to go? And I remember trying to understand what was happening because I knew my body was going to hit the floor in less than a second. And at the same time, I had forever to decide what I wanted to do.
Wow, that's wild.
And as I'm looking at my body in the ladder, I see this beautiful angel come in, different from my first near-death experience, dressed in red and gold. And when I see this angel, I know immediately, oh, this angel is here to either take me home or to shift something so that I can stay. And so in that moment, I look down and I see my two younger kids in the kitchen. And when I see them, I know I have to stay. So I make this decision. And as I make this decision, I'm downloaded with information and I'm told, okay, you can stay, but you've got to go back and you've got to do your mediumship and help people in the way that you can help them. They told me my marriage would probably end in divorce. They told me there would be more trauma later in my life. Some of the information actually still gets revealed. I don't remember everything they told me, but once in a while I'll have a memory come back in and I'm like, oh, that's right. So it's very interesting because the most pivotal moment in my life was when time stood still, in that moment where I decided to say yes and come back. And so I come back, I fall, I hit the back of my head on the corner of the granite island in the kitchen. I had a 5.5-inch skull fracture. I had a brain bleed. I lost my taste, my smell, part of my hearing, and my equilibrium. But I survived the fall by 0.5 inch because I missed my brainstem by 0.5 inch.
Jesus, Michelle.
I know. I did it the hard way. So what happens then is I am obviously taken to the hospital. I'm in ICU for a while. I'm in the hospital about 10 days. I remember vividly, I am telling everyone, the angel moved my head. When I was taken to the first hospital and they discovered the brain bleed, I remember telling my husband, I'm not going to die, but you need to make sure I get to the specialty hospital. So they sent me on to a specialty hospital. But I already knew in those moments around it that I wasn't going to die, no matter what the damage looked like. And I also knew that an angel had moved my head. It was that clear. So at some point, I get out of the hospital and I come home. I need help walking. I have all sorts of physical trauma. I really did this the ugly way as far as the physical side of it. And what happens is in January of 2012, my son, who was 5, started getting depressed because he had gone to call 911 and we believed his call did not go through. But I thought, well, maybe he dialed 991 or he was so scared. Who knew? So we would tell him, Josh, you opened the door. The policeman got to come in because you opened the door. And he would say, I didn't need to be there. Sophie did it without me. There was nothing I could say to help him to feel better. The end of January, my grandfather, who passed away when I was 12, came through to me in a huge mediumship visit. He talked about my accident. He talked about my son being good with electronics. My son and him never even met in this earthly lifetime. And then he said to me, he said, "Michelle, you need to get the 911 recording. There's something on there you should know." And I didn't even know I could get it. So at that point in time, I ordered it. It took a few weeks to come in, put it into play it when it got to the house. And I hear them say, "911, what's your emergency?" And in his little broken voice, my son Josh says, "Sophie, what do I say?" And he laid the phone down. And for the next minute and a half, you can hear the operators trying to get their attention. And then in the background, you hear him say he's going to push the panic alarm on the house. My daughter says, "Hold on, let me try calling 911. The call ends. She redials. There's a second 911 call where her call went through. So when he came home from kindergarten that day, I said, "Josh, hope was coming. Your call went through." And it was like I lifted this 5,000-pound weight off this little 5-year-old boy.
Oh.
And you could see his self-worth just flooding back in. Mm. And at that moment, I actually truly realized the value of mediumship and how much our loved ones are always connected to us.
Mm. But it's even more amazing. This happened. The accident happened after the experience. After the world stopped. How do you characterize that?
I know. That's amazing. Because it was the choice that I made to stay. Really, time stood still, right? And
you're knowing that you're going to fall. You feel the whatever, the ladder collapsing or move, and you know it's going to happen at that instant. Everything went to a stop, complete
Absolutely.
Stop, right? And there was just spaciousness. And that, okay.
There was forever in a moment.
Mm. Mm. Forever in a moment, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's something, I've talked to all sorts of people around NDEs, but I've never heard of one happen prior to the actual instigation of it, so to speak, you know?
Right. Well, but when I think about it, for me, it makes sense because that was clearly an exit point for me. So had I chosen to leave, my head wouldn't have been moved a half an inch. I would have hit my brain stem. I would have been immediately dead. Mm. So at that point in time, it was a big life choice.
That must be so complex as to the reality of you making a choice. Who's the you that's making the choice is a question. You start there. And nothing comes out of a void. I mean, there's lifetimes of whatever a soul has gone, in my understanding, which is God only knows. But absolutely, this is the manifestation of a lot of previous lifetimes of activity and getting you to this particular point. I guess the point was, as you just said, that you fully at that moment through these circumstances realized, as they would say in the East, your dharma, soul. You put it because you work with people around soul plan, right? Mm-hmm. It manifested itself for you.
It did. It reminded me of the bigger calling for why I'm here, not just to be a wife and a mom and a friend and a sister and a daughter.
Yeah. So, and then as we go along here, it's like a biopic we're doing here.
It is. So then, okay. So I had a lot of physical trauma. I mean, it took me months. I'm still in cranial sacral therapy. And
oh, really?
That was years ago. So I'm still recovering, but I will always give myself the room to keep healing. Having said that, a few months after the accident, I would start getting what I would call downloads or spontaneous information from other people's loved ones who had passed on the other side. without me looking for it or initiating it.
Oh, really?
And I knew I had agreed to do mediumship, but I'm going to be honest with you. This became a little concerning for me. And so I was like, I think I need to go talk to a counselor because I'm talking to dead people here. So as spirit would have it, they led me to the perfect counselor who said, oh, Michelle, what a gift. Let's get you a mentor. And so with about a year of counseling and her encouragement, I started looking for a mentor. And then I started mentoring with different mediums and healers and really starting to learn how to hone this in, how to really do this on demand so that I could be of service in the way that I said I would be.
Mm. Wow. It's perfect. It's all perfect, huh? It's
amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. You know, I think I mentioned, I'm not sure if it was before we started, but I had found this amazing article, and I should give credit to who wrote it. It's a man named Alex Blaisdell. And just very recently, in the last few days, this article came out. There's a quote in here that I really love. From William James from 1909. Mm-hmm. And he had the characterization is that for all that science has learned about the working of life, death remains among the most intractable of mysteries. And here's what William James says. At times I've been tempted to believe that the Creator has eternally intended this department of nature to remain baffling, to prompt our curiosities and hopes and suspicions, all in equal measure. Isn't that cool? I mean,
oh, I love that.
It's so true. I mean, I, you know, some of the people that I work with, teachers and so on, one in particular is this wonderful woman named Roshi Joan Halifax. She is constantly talking about just get up close and friendly with the mystery, okay? Because it includes the whole cycle. And to stand in fear over your lifetime about it is counterproductive, to say the very least. So, and then you did, I do know that you had some extreme trauma, right, with someone close to you, your husband. Leaving.
I don't know how much
you want to talk about that. But then.
We can dive into that. So it was actually my life partner, but I'll follow through with some of what my life guides had said. My marriage did end in divorce. With every step that I took following the mediumship and that promise that I had made to help people and be who I was, it was very challenging on my ex. And so after 25 years of marriage, that ended in divorce. I went on to find love again with an amazing life partner who I knew had depression because I had seen it over the time that we had been together. And there would be a few days here or there where he would just need to turn off his phone and his computer and kind of lay in bed for 2 or 3 days and then he'd come back out, you know, ready to face the world again. And he had tried medications. They did not work for him. He had every self-help book you can think of. Oh, yeah. He meditated. He did everything you can think of. And he had gone to brain training and he had done so many things trying to work through his depression. Well, in August of 23, so not too long ago.
Oh, now.
God. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Seven months ago. I had had this situation. I went out of town to go see my sister and my niece had just had a baby. And so we were kind of celebrating and I had texted with him that morning and I was on my way home. And when I got home that night, he wasn't responding to my text. So I figured he was kind of in a depression again. The next day I had gone by his house. I saw that his car was outside and his daughter. So I thought, okay, he's home. I had called his work. They said he called in sick. And I just kind of said, okay, he just needs his space. Mm. The following night, we were supposed to go to one of our friends' parties together, and he didn't go. And so I came home, and that night I had been emailing, calling, you know, doing all that stuff. I came home and I was in my bathroom getting ready for bed. And I actually felt him come in behind me. I felt his presence standing behind me. And I heard him say to me, "You sure are beautiful," because he would always say that. And in that moment, I started shaking and I started crying and I started saying, "This isn't real," because I knew this was mediumship and I did not want this to be mediumship. So I made my way to my bed where I just collapsed, and I actually felt him lay down behind me, put his arm over me and say, "I wanted to be the one to tell you." And he had transitioned himself by suicide.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm so sorry. And this is not that long ago.
Yeah. It's a lot. I guess this is one of the things that I share with people, with all of the knowledge that I have as a medium, a psychic, a healer, whatever my universal level of knowledge is, there is still no way to bypass the human grief. And I know that he is great. And I know that he is whole. And I know that he is healed from his earthly traumas. And yet human Michelle still has to go through the grieving process. There's no way for me to bypass it.
You should, I'm sure you do speak to this, but this is a great thing to speak to, given your abilities and understanding through the experiences you've had, not just your own, the NDEs that we were talking about, but also working with other people. And yet, here we are. It's okay. We are human. You can't bypass that no matter what. It's an amazing thing.
It's really caused me to dive into soul plans, because I do believe our soul has a plan before we come to planet Earth. I don't believe any of us are accidentally here or, oops, how'd you get here? You know, there is a divine orchestration to our time here and the lessons that we learn. And I believe that none of that is accidental.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me how you work with people I mentioned before, you know, understanding one's dharma, which it's to me the same, really the same conceptually as a soul plan. I mean, I look back, I was so fortunate to meet this being who, and by the way, everybody out there, anybody who's at all suspicious of anything that we are speaking to, mediumship particularly, and psychic ability, forget about it, okay? You've heard me talk about and Ram Dass and Krishnadas, these obviously talk about our experiences with Neem Karoli Baba, who knew absolutely everything from our past, present, and future. And he could be in two places at the same time. You know, all of the things that Michelle is speaking to are, it's as real gets, okay? And I just feel very, very fortunate, because in terms of a soul plan, how about this? I was there, you know, and then I'm 24 years old when I'm there, something like that. And one day he says to me, what did you do back? I'm from Canada. And I was the program director, Michelle, of a huge rock and roll station in Montreal. And that's how I met Ram Dass, because they wanted me to promote a talk that he was going to give. And as a result, I heard the first lecture of his, which just, you know, the man was so honest and full of love and so on. I wanted to meet him, so I went and met him. And in that moment, that's how my whole life got propelled forward. But when I went, so I'm there just a short amount of time, months maybe, and he says, what were you doing? So I'm trying to think of how do I characterize, this is all through a translator. I mean, supposedly, but I'm trying to figure out how to characterize what I was doing so that he would understand, being in, you know, in a completely different culture. And I was a program director for a major rock and roll radio, whatever. Before I could say a word, he went like this and he pointed in English, he went, "Broadcaster." that's what I had been doing. I had, when I first heard Ram Dass, I used that vehicle to get the word out because I wanted to share what I thought was just so grand, you know, and everybody should know about this.
Right.
And the rest, my entire life, when we call a soul plan or my dharma, has been doing this. You know, although I had a record company, I was promoting, you know, conscious music and world music and stuff, and so on and so forth. You know, I've been working as the director of the Love Serve Remember Foundation for many years now, going on almost 20 years, and doing what it was that he put. It wasn't like he was saying, "You're going to do this because I'm doing anything." It was more just reality. This is the program. Follow the curriculum, so to speak. And so how do you work with people when you actually you work with an individual? How do you work with them in terms of giving them a way to flow into what naturally they would be the most fulfilled doing?
Yeah. So normally I will start with connecting to their own spirit team. I like to say we all have a spirit team around us, whether we call them angels, life guides, grandma, grandpa, whatever these words are, this energy, this web of love that is supporting us. And for each individual, I will connect with their team and really kind of dive into what does this person need to know? What is the core of their soul? How do we help them move forward to live their best, most productive life? Now, the fun part about this is on a soul level, people are usually pretty receptive, but then our minds get in the way very often.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah, we say, I can't do that. That would never work. And the truth is, what I have found is the people who are really willing to follow their passion, that is their purpose. Because when we are living an inspired life and people see that, we're able to share that energy with them and they're able to share it to help others.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Really, really great. By the way, everybody out there, here's another thing. You know, it's not like I'm trying to give everybody the security of, okay, this is real, you're okay, you know, I don't need to do that. But on another hand, you know, meeting this particular being, Neem Karoli Baba, just expresses everything Michelle is saying in a completely different manner. But there's nothing different about it whatsoever, you know. And it's just amazing that the different ways in which we come on this earth, and we all have certain proclivities, we all have certain ways of being and ways of wanting to express our nature and so on and so forth. And we end up finding, yes, what you're saying, which is a support system. It can be, for me, it's an Indian guru, which, you know, is weird. For you, it's you know, your connection to that which is beyond form through mediumship. And for somebody else, it is the most pristine Zen practice that you ever saw in your life, sitting in a bare room and just connecting with true nature, you know. Isn't it phenomenal, all the different ways that the divine presence, shall we say, and, you know, we have all different words, whatever we want to call it, provides what we need to move forward in our lives in a way that is not I have years of working on an audiobook with a friend of mine, a podcaster named Duncan Trussell. Everybody knows who listens to this podcast, called The Movie of Me to the Movie of We. I mean, that seems to me to really be about what our lives are about. It can't be about me, you know? And however we find that we are given the experiences, sometimes, you know, look at yourself, sometimes very tough. I mean, there was a lot of suffering, you know, that you went through as you described the NDEs, as you describe other events in your life. And this connection really, it supplants the divide, the polarization inside ourselves when we really surrender to the connection. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, and I am a firm believer that this earthly life, it is magical if we allow it to be. And that doesn't mean it's an easy road and we get to bypass suffering. But what that means is that we are supported with each step. And with each step, as we learn to shine our light, it helps others shine theirs.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I was going to say, I know what I was going to say. I was also going to say, I went into Jungian therapy many years ago with, he became like a mentor of some sort. But this is how and something else opened up for me in this process, because he was not into gurus or Eastern stuff at all, but I was. And he was there to serve me. He was that, you know, he was very beautiful in that sense. And so I'd come and sit down or lie down on the couch, because Jungians, that's what they do.
Right.
And he'd say, well, you know, why don't we do something? Let's hang out with Neem Karoli Baba and just hang out and sit in the silence of it. And we would do that. And that presence, of course, would just permeate the room. And this, I was always so taken by somebody who cared enough. It was like when I first met Ram Dass, he cared enough to throw himself out. No Richard Alpert, no Ram Dass. What do you need? And set a container for whatever it was the universe wanted to give me in that moment, which was trust, intuitive trust, basically, which I hadn't had except maybe my mom when I was a baby. So, right. You know, this is your story as well.
Yeah. The universe will give us what we need.
Yeah. And intuitive trust is a huge thing.
I think that most humans have that to some extent. They will say, I have a gut feeling. I always trust my gut. Or, yeah. You know, oh, I felt that in my heart, right? So I think that that intuition is absolutely a given gift that each one of us carries. We just have to remember to listen to it and know that we can grow it and expand it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. This has been great, Michelle.
Michelle
and I met
it.
Accidentally online somehow. And yeah, no, I'm really happy that we met and I'm happy that we're doing this. And so one thing we should say, though, is that you are available to people to help them on their journey. So I just, MichelleClaire.com, is that it?
Yes. So, Michelle Claire, C-L-A-R-E .net, actually.
.net, okay. And we're going to have it in the show notes. And Michelle is M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E.
Yes.
You have that L. So, yeah, take advantage of somebody who has extraordinary experience and a lot of compassion and love, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. It's truly been an honor and a pleasure to be able to have this conversation and connection with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody, this is Mind Rolling on Be Here Now Network. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and take advantage of all the wonderful teachers and presenters that we have on the network. And we shall see you next week. Thank you again, Michelle.